the sort of cultural makeup of the city lends itself to soccer. Having so much international influence, having so many different backgrounds and identities and histories, and having so much cultural diversity, I think soccer is a global game, and St. Louis benefits from that sort of global diversity.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of the City Voice podcast. I'm joined by an incredibly special guest. It's Megan McCormick, the U14 coach. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Excited to be a part of it.
Are you having a good week?
Yeah, it's been a good week. Busy, but good. A little bit chillier than we'd like, but yeah, it's been a good week.
Did you manage to get down to the opening game against Bayer Leverkusen?
I did. We were just chatting about it before we started, and what an incredible experience. Yeah, it was awesome.
What was your what's your hottest take after walking around the stadium and experiencing it?
Yeah, I mean, I think just to get to go and experience the atmosphere in the stadium and the team and the product on the field as a fan of the game, you know, I think it's, we sort of live it every day and it's our job and it's our work, but to get to experience it as a fan and to share it with the community and with the fans and with the city of St. Louis was just like a really special experience. Like the energy and the excitement around what was going on, I think was really special on Wednesday.
You're the U14 head coach. You're working with the next generation of players. How inspired were the kids that you were working with on a daily about what's going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to explain. I think the connection between especially our training facility and the stadium and having that visual connection every single day is so powerful. And then even walking around the stadium on Wednesday and seeing some of our academy kids walking around the stadium and getting ready to watch the game. And then at the end of the game, we had three academy players, active academy players on the field. So I think just getting to see, you know, in real time, that connection is so powerful. And talking to kids in training and, you know, we regularly have players point to the stadium and reference it and talk about that that's their goal. That's where they want to be someday. So I think it's a really powerful thing for young people to see, you know, see their goals right in front of them and see how capable and possible it is to sort of be there one day.
That's awesome. It would be remiss of us not to talk about this beauty that is sitting in front of us, the new inaugural kit for next season. I'd love to get your view on like what you think of this shirt, and does this make it all feel a little bit more real?
Yeah, I think it definitely does, especially Wednesday, seeing people walking around the stadium wearing the kit. Obviously, as staff, we got a little bit of a sneak peek, you know, weeks ago. So I think to see it on the street, in the stadium, around the city has been really cool the last couple of days. And I think for me, the thing that stands out is you can see it from across the street and you know it's city. You know it's St. Louis, and you can see it from across the room, from across an airport or whatever it is. And I think in the future, imagining that and immediately being able to connect that city red to St. Louis, being from the place, I think is so powerful, including like the details of the arch and the flag and things that are so specific and unique to St. Louis, and being able to put them on the field in a physical form, I think is really special.
Awesome. All right. We're going to move into a really important section of the podcast right now. These are the warm-up questions.
Perfect.
We are going to be interrogating if these answers aren't entirely accurate.
Great.
Okay. So World Cup winner.
I think, you know, probably I would have to go with Germany or Brazil at the moment. I think would be my two picks.
Who are the standout players for who are you keeping an eye on there?
I mean, in particular, I think just the depth of Brazil's roster. I think looking at the mix of veteran experience and young, exciting players, and I think player for player, position for position, like it's going to be a hard roster to match. So I think just the depth and quality that's there. And then I, you know, with Germany, I think it's a team with, you know, in a program with such a storied history in the game. And it seems to be that regardless of what people think going into it, they're always a contender.
It's fair. Player or players you want to most see crush the World Cup? Like which player are you like, come on?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a player that I've always really enjoyed watching play, and I think sometimes and maybe now is getting more recognition than a handful of years ago is Kevin De Bruyne. I think like the way he plays the game and the way he approaches it and his intensity and commitment, but also, you know, I think is one of the most elegant and beautiful players in the world right now. So to see him on a world stage against the best, I think will be really exciting. And I hope he goes out there and crushes it.
I think sometimes people forget how many incredible players come from Belgium. in general. You're like this tiny little country and they just produce so many winners.
Yeah, it's true.
Favorite player of all time?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think, you know, like for me, especially like growing up, I'm going to actually flip it. It's probably Michelle Akers. Watching the way with the 99ers and just like I remember being young and like this sort of iconic player in the way she looked and the way that she moved and the way that she played the game was, I think, just so different on the women's side than anything that we had ever seen at that time. And so I think that's one that probably stands out to me in terms of like all time. Marta certainly is another one when you talk about like the all time great. So I think like certainly for me, when you ask that question, my mind immediately goes to the women's game.
That's great. Well, this one's a serious one. Dog or cat?
Dog.
Dog?
Of course. Yeah, of
this
course.
This club, everyone's a dog person. Everyone's a dog person.
That's good. That's good to know that I've chosen the right environment.
Yeah, you've chosen the right environment. Favorite restaurant in St. Louis?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm new to St. Louis as of this past summer, so I think I haven't gotten maybe as much experience as others, but I think right now one that I really enjoy going to is Fiddlehead Fern Cafe in Shaw. I'm a big coffee shop, pastry, really good espresso drinks kind of person. And so I think like that's a great place that I've gone back to pretty often. So I enjoy that.
I know you picked the good one because the crew are taking notes in the background.
Yeah.
Going to go and see. Secret skill no one knows about.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe just like I would say, and people who are around me more, maybe probably they pick up on it, but I have a odd memory for random facts. How about that? So just like I remember a lot of odd and random facts. I'm like just naturally a really curious person. And so I think across disciplines and that sort of thing, I just am full of kind of random knowledge that has very little use in an everyday context.
What is your best random fact?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. You got to ask me about a specific subject. I don't know.
Well, come back. If you think of it during the podcast, you've got
to. Yeah, I think that's like asking a stand-up comedian to be funny and tell a joke.
That's true. What would you be doing if you were not coaching?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd still be teaching. I think working in education, I think coaching is a form of teaching for me. And so I think I would probably just be an educator in a different field, whether that was in a classroom in sort of a formal sense or maybe in a different kind of organizational standpoint. But 100% I can say I'd be an educator.
Great. Okay, well, we're going to move into the full podcast now. The people of St. Louis, they love to know a little bit about the background of the people that are bringing this club to life. Where did you grow up?
Grew up for the most of my childhood in Columbus, Indiana.
What's the soccer scene like in Indiana?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly behind a lot of other areas of the country. I think it wasn't something that was ever mainstream when I was growing up. I think it's growing. And with Indy 11 and with the success of a lot of the college programs, obviously Indiana University has a really storied history of success on the men's and women's side. You've got Notre Dame and some other really notable programs in the college game. And I think the pro game is certainly there and alive and well in Indianapolis. And yeah, but that's all I think come maybe later in my life. And so growing up, it wasn't really in the water, I guess, the way that it is in other places.
So how did your relationship with soccer start?
Yeah, it's a funny question I think that I get asked often, and mine's probably a little bit different story than most people. I came to soccer pretty late. I started playing rec, as most kids do, at a really young age. Played for 1 or 2 years, and then, as my mom would tell you, quit because the boys wouldn't pass me the ball. So stopped playing soccer and then really fell in love with other sports and came back to soccer my freshman year of high school. So didn't really get introduced to the game until I was 14 years old. And it was the varsity coach at the high school that I played at had seen me playing basketball, small town, Southern Indiana. And it was, you know, we've got to find athletes and we've got to find kids that have the right mentality and try to recruit them to play soccer because nobody knew much about it. And so, yeah, the rest is sort of history.
And what position did you play?
For the vast majority of my career, I was a center back.
Always center back? Or did you?
The last year I played, we had some very talented young center backs on the team that I was playing with. And so we had a central forward who got injured early in the season. And so I spent my last season playing like as a striker. So
nice.
Every center back's dream, I think.
You mentioned some of your sporting heroes in the questions round. Were there particular teams that inspired you to pick up the game?
Yeah, I don't, like, I not that I can think of. I think, you know, and especially maybe where I grew up and just sort of being from a small town and being in a family that sport wasn't really the center of anything. It was just kind of something that we all did. I think most of my sporting heroes were like the kids that I played with who were just a couple of years older than me. Or, you know, players or kids from Indiana or from my hometown who had gone on to play in college or had gone on to do something different. I think it was often the kids that I would say were of a similar generation, but that I got to watch on an everyday basis, but who were just a little bit ahead of me in their pathway, were the people that I idolized, like on the soccer field. And for me, basketball was my first love. So the same was true on the basketball court. I can think of a couple people who were a year or two ahead of me. And those I think were really, like, for me, you know, my role models and heroes growing up as athletes.
So you picked the game up again at 14. And what point did you think, I want to make a career out of this? I want this to be something more than just a hobby.
Like, I don't know that there was ever a sort of tipping point. I think it was initially the hook was, you know, soccer might be a good way to stay in shape for basketball season. And it sort of served its purpose over the first year or two. And I think then it became clear from others around me and probably other, you know, specifically coaches and older players saw it well before I did, that there was maybe a pathway and a future in the game and started to plant those seeds and really push me to think about it. You know, and then I think in terms of making it a career, as I really fell in love with the game and started playing for myself after high school specifically, you know, I realized that it was something I always wanted to stay connected to. And then it was just finding mechanisms and ways to do it.
So you play pro. Talk to us about, like, that experience when you get the first deal and, like, what was it like?
You know, I think not by choice in some ways. It was in a moment when kind of between women's professional leagues. So it was the WPSL, which I think officially is semi-pro because there wasn't an active pro league at the time. But I think the choice for me to move in a different direction was a forced one. So as I graduated from high school, I knew that I wanted to major in architecture. And all the schools that were recruiting me and had offered me scholarship opportunities to play soccer had told me, the architecture departments had told me I couldn't do both, and so that I was going to have to choose. And so it was like a really sort of difficult decision in my senior year, and I ultimately decided to pursue architecture and studied at Ball State University. And I think in the first couple of months there, realized that I wasn't ready to hang up my boots, and so I knew I couldn't play through the university. So I had to find somewhere else to play, and through friends and just network and everything else, like, found out about Indiana United and, you know, at the time a women's semi-pro team, and went to a tryout and played with them for 4 or 5 years.
And you eventually hung up your boots, and we'll talk about that next. But at every stage of your career, there's something that carries you through into the next phase. Playing at semi-professional level, like, what did you learn about that, like, pushed you into the next phase?
I think I just learned, and I alluded to it earlier, in just starting to play for myself. And it taught me how important the game was to me in terms of being part of a team and having something to really train for and work for and, you know, collective and individual goal setting and those sorts of things. And I think that experience in, you know, having to carve out a path that wasn't very straightforward, it took a lot of work. It took a lot of maybe extra steps that other players maybe didn't have to take in that moment if they were going straight into the college pathway. And so I think it really solidified the importance of the game in my life. And I think that was the point probably that I knew that this is going to be something that I continue to do in some capacity for the rest of my life.
So the next phase of your career, you start to think, like, that you want to develop the next generation coming through. It takes a special type of person to teach, requires a lot of patience, a lot of dedication. Like, what made you decide that was what you wanted to do?
I think similar to maybe my introduction or my sort of reintroduction to soccer in high school, of unexpected, not something that I ever kind of saw in my future, in my pathway, but it was, you know, a high school coach who was also a club coach in small town, rural Indiana at the time, who pulled me aside when I was a senior and asked me to start helping with some of the youth teams in our community. And I think it was, looking back, maybe a way to get me extra touches on the ball and maybe clean up some things on my end. But it was a really good introduction to what that was like to teach and to give back to this game and to get to work with, yeah, the future generation, to your point earlier. So I think that was maybe the first inkling of, or the first kind of interest. And from there, just continuing to be involved and having opportunities through coaches or clubs that I was playing at to coach younger players. And so, yeah, I think that was maybe like certainly the starting point.
So you've had a number of roles. Like, you've worked for federations, you've coached the coaches, you work with kids. What's the ideal role for you? And like, how did you? I mean, I'm guessing it's doing what you're doing now, but
yeah.
Like, how did you land on that after all of those different experiences?
I think it's always a question, or it's always been a question of, what's the next interesting way to make an impact? And you know, when I was 18 years old, it felt like a good way to make an impact to help as an assistant coach in some of the community teams. And when I was finishing college, it seemed like a good way to impact, you know, young people to help with a high school team or to do whatever it was. And I think the moves that I've made have always been around that idea of, you know, where is there an opportunity to align my interests with a need in the world and try to put the passion and the energy to work. Not only because I really enjoy it, but because it's going to make an impact. And I think specifically in the role that I'm in, that's what really drew me to it.
This new role that you picked up, how did you come to be introduced to the club and Lutz and everything that's going on here?
It was an unexpected phone call, as I think is often the case, from John Hackworth. So John and I spent time in the same organization, not working closely together, but certainly we crossed paths. We were in U.S. Soccer Federation in different roles for a couple of years. And so crossed paths in different environments and meetings and staff trainings and things like that. And then I think, you know, as he tells the story, when the role or the idea for the role came about, he started making a list of people who might be a good fit and might be of interest. And so started reaching out. And I think, so it was a good conversation and then getting to spend time meeting Lutz, meeting other folks in the organization, spending time in St. Louis, trying to understand the project and the motives and the objectives with, you know, bringing an MLS team here and an academy. That was all kind of an important part of the process for me to make the decision.
Lutz talks about the playing philosophy here and expecting it to run through every level. Did you have a similar coaching philosophy to the one that he's trying to implement here? Or is it your raw talent and then you implement what the philosophy is? How does that work?
I think Lutz probably would be the better person to answer that question, but kind of putting myself in the way he might answer it, I don't think it was my preferred like style of play that brought me to the club or brought me to the opportunity. I think it was more about my background in education and in club development and in a technical director role, working with clubs in different communities and trying to build and develop relationships while also having the coaching piece and the soccer piece as well. That was probably like the attractive part of it. And I think for me, I think the real important thing is that the club has a playing identity. I think I've had the opportunity to work in lots of different clubs and environments that have a variety of different philosophies and ideas about the way the game should be played. And if one day I have a chance to do it from a blank slate, will it look exactly like City's playing philosophy? I don't think so. But I think it would probably be a blended philosophy of the places that I've been. And I think it's easiest to work in an environment where there's a really clear idea around the way the game should be played on the field.
So when I've spoken to Lutz about you, he gets very excited. He says that you have one of the most unique roles at the club. Could you explain to the City fans what your role is and the specifics and why it's a little bit different to other coaches?
The title of the role seems straightforward, U14 head coach. But to Lutz's point, like, I think it is a more unique role than what the title maybe indicates. So the our U14 pathway program is not a full-time team the way the U15, 16, 17, and then our UPSL team are full-time programs where we have the kids in our environment every day. And the U14 pathway program is really looking at how do we build a link between our full-time U15 team and then what's happening out in the community and local clubs. And so it's a program that we select and identify a larger pool of players through a variety of mechanisms, scouting, training sessions, games, open trials, and then we train that pool of players on a biweekly basis here in our facility with our staff as if they were a full-time academy team in those training sessions. And so I think it's a way, despite not having a full-time U14 team, it's a way to really try to impact that age group, to try to push resources and, you know, build a relationship in the community with the local clubs, with local coaches, with players. And ultimately, we hope that the outcome of that is that the U15 players next fall are a little more prepared, they're a little bit more ready, they're a little further along in their pathway than maybe what players would have been without that program. So I think it sits in an in-between space. It's not necessarily a community-based program and it's not a full-time academy program. So I think it, and there was no blueprint for it. So I think that's maybe why it is a really unique role. And I think it's a big part of what attracted me to the club.
You mentioned that like curiosity is, you know, part of your makeup.
Yeah.
How do you scout St. Louis? Like what's the approach? There are so many kids playing around here. Like how do you, you know, you've got a finite amount of resource, your time. How do you know where to aim that?
I think one of the most impactful and effective ways that we can really learn about like the player pool in the market is by building relationships and really amplifying other folks' ability to see the way that we see as coaches and as a club in terms of what we look for in players and what we really value in young players. Because I think if we can leverage those relationships and we can utilize club directors and club coaches and have those individual conversations and phone calls and really build that trust, suddenly our scouting network is far bigger than our staff here in the academy or in the club. And so I think really it's a long-term approach, but really by building those trusting and respectful relationships in the community, I think ultimately that's what's going to generate the best player pool in year one, in year two, and then hopefully sustainably over time.
So do you spend much time like on the side of games? Like do you show up and then you're doing your scouting in person, or is it more like a video analysis type thing?
That's certainly part of the role. I think both of those things, in terms of myself and my assistant, and certainly the other academy staff lends a hand or supports us in that as well with the U14s. Yeah, it's a variety of mechanisms. So trying to be out in the community and being at games, I think is really important. And trying to also spend times in players' training environments is something that we've set and is an objective for ourselves and something that is part of the role that, you know, we've sort of created for this U14 head coach, because it's important as we make those decisions that we have as many data points on these young players as we can over time, because we know that development happens at different rates, happens at different moments for different players. And when they're young, a lot can change in a really short time period. So any way we can see them, and video is always a good secondary tool, but when we can see them in person and face to face, I think is the best option for us.
So when you show up to a game and people are going to start to recognize who you are because of your uniform, and you know, hopefully because they're watching this podcast, what would you tell those kids? What are you looking for on the pitch that's going to make you pay attention?
I think it's a question that I've gotten a lot, especially certainly in the time that I was working with U.S. Soccer. Like, what advice would you give young players when they want to be noticed or they want to be scouted or evaluated in a positive way? And I think, the best advice is probably the hardest thing to apply is, you know, just play the game. And I think encouraging players to make mistakes and encouraging them to make active mistakes so that we can see what they're thinking, encouraging players to speak and communicate on the field because we can hear what they see. We can hear what they're thinking when they're talking on the field. And so always trying to sit, for me, close enough to the field that I can hear the players. And oftentimes the ones that are talking the most, it's the easiest to evaluate how they see the game. And I think reminding players that it's often the moment that you make a mistake that someone is watching to see what it is you do next. And that says a lot about who you are as a person, who you are as a player, and then maybe what the potential is if you're in a really highly competitive, high-stress environment where the expectation is there's going to be a lot of mistakes. How you respond in those moments is going to be a big indicator of how much you can learn and how much you can grow.
When Lutz first joined the club, one of the things he said, and I can't remember the exact quote, I should have put it down. He said that he wanted to look in places that other clubs aren't looking. There is a pay-to-play model in St. Louis, which has been very successful. As part of your role, are you widening the net? Like, what are you doing to make sure that, you know, kids that aren't in that model are getting seen as well?
It's a really important part of, I think, the role of the club in the community, and especially in the academy and in some of the programs that we're running, to make sure that the game is accessible to everyone and that we are sort of looking for talent in all of the pockets and corners of the city and the surrounding areas. And so I think, again, it comes back to relationships, building relationships in all of these pockets and the markets, and really trying to share information and build trust and help those people in those areas see what we see or look for what it is that we look for, so that when we pick up the phone and make a phone call or ask about players, you know, they can sort of be our second set of eyes in those neighborhoods or those pockets. So I think that's one way, is the relationship building becomes really important. I also think that the Futures program is going to, over time, be a really powerful tool in terms of our academy model. And, you know, Sasha and I have spent a lot of time talking about what does it look like and how do we make sure that as we were finding these players out in the community through these clinics or Futures program or the everything else that we're running in maybe neighborhoods, to your point, where there's not a big soccer club or there's not a lot of programming being offered in a formal way that we would recognize it as coaches, how do we make sure that those players don't fall through the cracks? And can we build relationship between the Futures programming and the U14 pathway programming to make sure that kids and coaches and families see that these are viable pathways to be seen and to be recognized and then hopefully to get opportunities? And I think it starts with our U14 pathway program right now, certainly running open trials so that anybody from anywhere can sort of register and show up for those and kind of have an opportunity to be seen by our staff. And then I think from that, really making sure that we're holding up to our word and giving opportunities to players that aren't from the big clubs with these storied traditions, that we're giving opportunities to players who, you know, maybe have a really great untapped potential that we see, but they're not in the pay-to-play model right now.
You've been here for a while, scouting players, like seeing all the talent. Is it unusual that a city that hasn't had a professional club to have so much talent? And why do you think St. Louis consistently produces really good players that are of the highest standard?
I think there's a lot of factors. I think the time is certainly one of the things that's on St. Louis's side in terms of player development, that soccer has been here in such a meaningful way from the turn of the century, right? From the early 1900s. And I think that's different. It didn't come to Indiana till much later in a meaningful way, right? And it took, and maybe other states are, soccer is growing and it's becoming more ubiquitous in smaller towns and more ubiquitous outside of these markets or places that we expect it to be. I think St. Louis, certainly the sort of cultural makeup of the city lends itself to soccer. Having so much international influence, having so many different backgrounds and identities and histories and having so much cultural diversity, I think soccer is a global game and St. Louis benefits from that sort of global diversity in its population. And I think that there have been enough, especially on the men's side, and there's examples on the women's side as well, there have been enough players from a small town that everyone can relate to who've made it to the highest stage. and made it to the highest level out of St. Louis, and what that does then for the future generation in terms of participation, in terms of like lighting this fire and helping young kids fall in love with the game. It feels so much more attainable when it's somebody from next door than when it's somebody from 3,000 miles away.
Tim Ream said in one of the press clippings that I saw that having this club would have been more beneficial to him growing up. He didn't have the same thing. Do you think that having this sitting in the heart of downtown is going to encourage more kids to maybe consider the sort of sports that they want to get into when they're young and thinking about which path they want to take?
I hope so. I hope that it puts soccer at the top of the list, not just as a consideration, but maybe as a default. Growing up in Indiana, right, I think the default was always basketball. Everybody I knew played basketball at some point. It was just part of growing up in Indiana. And I think my hope for the city of St. Louis, specifically like the impact of this sort of organization coming here and being downtown and being so visible and also investing so many resources into the community in terms of soccer programming, my hope would be that at some point in the future, the default is if you're from St. Louis, you played soccer at some point. Maybe just for a couple of years while you were really young and then you grew into other things or you found other passions or it wasn't for you. But I think that's such a powerful thing to have it be, at the top of the list and be so visible. And again, I alluded to earlier, my role models were the people in my community that I could see every day, because there weren't people that looked like me necessarily on TV, or there wasn't the accessibility to soccer or to the things that I wanted to watch in terms of sport. But when it's in your backyard, it's so easy to have like those role models, and it's so easy to see a future and a pathway when it's in your city and it's in your town. You don't have to move somewhere to find that. I think it's going to be, I think it could be transformative, hopefully, over time, and what it will do for its community impact, but also what it will do for young people in seeing soccer as a viable pathway.
We've talked a little bit about scouting. When you bring the players in and you're building a team, like, what is it like being coached by you, and like, what are the expectations on the training field?
Oh boy, I think the players would probably have, I can only imagine, a variety of answers to that. I think, as I kind of mentioned earlier, my lens is that of an educator. So I hope it feels like being in your favorite class in school, that I try to approach it from an educator's lens and standpoint in terms of teaching methodologies and ideas about, how we best learn, but bringing those to the soccer field the same way we'd see them in the classroom. I think that's important. Whether the kids would be able to articulate that, I don't know. But I think trying to have really high standards and really high expectations and holding people to those, even really young people, is important. But then also making sure that they have the tools, the resources, the support that they need as individuals to meet those expectations on an everyday basis. And trying to come alongside them as individuals in every point of their pathway. And continuing to push them to something maybe more than they realize they're capable of, I think is really important. Confidence, saying I think the players who've played for me in the past and maybe currently would say that it's fun, it's high energy, and it's, it has to be a really, I think, enjoyable and motivating environment in order to want to keep coming back every day.
And what has the experience been like for you personally? Like, it's not often you go into something that's completely new. And when there's nothing has been there before, especially in the role that you're in at the moment, it's difficult and lots of curveballs come out. So I'd love to hear what your experience has so far been like.
The experience has been interesting. And I don't know if it's, I was reflecting on this recently. It's I've been in a couple of roles now in the last handful of years that didn't exist before I took them. And I don't know if that's by design. It seems to be a significant enough pattern at this point that it's worth like noting. So I think it's something that I think is really exciting and equally sort of frustrating, I think, is the best way to describe it. The possibilities are limitless. And I think the trust of Lutz and John and others in the organization to one, create this new role, and then also give me so much freedom and autonomy and flexibility to craft it and change it and mold it into something that is meaningful to me and to the club and to the community has been like a wonderful experience. I think it's always challenging trying to get trust and build relationships around something that isn't a reality yet. And so I think that's been a unique challenge. But I think as we've moved through the fall and now there's a product on the field and we have players out there on a biweekly basis who are under 14s and we have coaches on the sideline observing those sessions and we can talk to them about the process and show them that we're going to live up to the things that we promise or that we've said that we're going to do, certainly I think the road gets easier. And then I think as that happens, trying to then refine it and get better at it and learn from it and get more collective input on how we can continue to really push this thing and improve it. So I think it's been, yeah, it's been an outstanding experience, but certainly not one without its frustrations.
All coaches will say winning is incredibly important and that's a barometer of success. But what does success look like to you outside of just, you know, the basics of you know, getting 3 points in every game and winning cups?
Watching the players be able to sort of put themselves in a position and perform in a way that they grow on an everyday basis. So I think that success certainly can be measured in points, but in terms of working in an organization with a really clear identity and a clear idea about the way we want to approach the game and approach training on an everyday basis, there are certainly ways to get those points and not live true to that identity. So I think really measuring it through that identity piece here is important first. Like, are we performing in the way that we want to perform on the field? Does it look the way we want it to look on the field? And I think if that's true, more times than not, hopefully the points follow is always like the objective. And I think as a coach, really measuring success is always stepping onto the field or stepping onto the sideline and knowing that you've put the players in the best possible position to win. And then what happens once the whistle blows, that's up to the players. But I think for as a coach, it's really at that point feeling confident that you've done everything you can to put them in the best position. And then at the end of the game, reflecting on whether they were able to go out and execute that.
And are fans able to come and watch the games? Is that an option?
Yeah, certainly our academy games. Well, I say that as our facility, sort of the construction is completed at our facility. So certainly as the spring rolls around and our academy schedule is out and online, we'd love to have fans come and watch our young teams out at the training facility. I think it's been a unique challenge with construction and roads closed and everything else this fall. But we're excited this spring to be able to have a larger number of spectators and have a little bit more accessibility to what our young players are doing in our facility.
The fans won't be stopped, though. I've seen them on top of the car park. I've seen them gathered all around the outside. They want to be in.
It was accurately described recently by the one and only Tim Kelly as water in your basement. You can do, you think you've done everything possible to keep them out, and there they are on the top of the parking garage or around the corner hiding behind the bushes and the trees. They will find a way to come and watch the game. So I think it was an accurate description for sure.
Do you like the idea that fans are like deeply interested in the talent coming through? Like it feels almost quite unique to hear that they are so passionate about the youngsters that this city produces.
I think it's a testament to the knowledge of the average fan in St. Louis of the game and their big picture understanding of what it is that it takes to be successful at the highest level. And that's a pipeline of talent. And I think that the best clubs in the world, whether they're buying that talent or developing that talent or developing it and selling that talent, like that sort of process is incredibly important to success on the highest stage. And certainly I think it's also an indicator of the connection that the people of St. Louis feel to this city and to this place, that they want to see the young people who are from this place be successful, whether it's through our pathway into our stadium or into other places. Like, I think that level of interest and really, I think, investment from fans I would say has caught me off guard in terms of the youth space, because I don't know that it's something that I've experienced in other places. But I think that it's a really powerful and great reminder to us as academy coaches, like how invested this city is and how invested our community is in making sure that we're taking care of like the next generation and giving them the best option to be successful.
What does success look like for you personally over the next year?
Certainly success is over the next year will be having the U14 pathway program up and running and more visible than it is now, and really having those strong, healthy relationships that as we go through the summer months and we think about moving into the sort of second cycle of that U14 pathway, feeling like we've canvassed more of the city, feeling like we haven't missed a hidden talent or an undeveloped talent somewhere in a pocket that we didn't look. I think being confident in that in the U14 pathway. And I think certainly for the academy as a whole, continuing to see the players progress through the different levels and the different sort of stages, and hopefully, I don't know that it's in the next year, but certainly in the near future, having homegrown players and having, you know, academy players on pro contracts, I think is something that we all sense is around the corner, and that's going to be, I think, a great measure of success, both personally and I think organizationally.
Fantastic. Well, that's all of my questions covered off. I just want to say a massive thank you. I know that everybody that's listening to this is going to enjoy that as much as I've enjoyed sitting in front of you, like hearing the plans for the future. Hopefully you'll come back.
Absolutely, 100%. Only if you'll have me.
Definitely have you. And if you are listening to the City Voice podcast, give us a 5-star review. Say that you listened to this interview and you loved it, because that's going to encourage her to come back in the near future. And on that note, we'll say ciao for now. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks.